Dr. Deaker received his Bachelor of Arts degree in religion from Mobile College in 1977. He then attended the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, from which he received his Master's of Divinity in 1979 and Doctor of Theology degree in 1985. His doctoral dissertation, A Study of Literary Pairing in the Fourth Gospel, concerns structuralism in that gospel. Dr. Deaker also received a Master of Arts degree in History from the University of New Orleans in 1982. From 1982 to 1985, he attended Notre Dame Seminary Graduate School of Theology, where he is a candidate for the Master of Arts in Theological Studies. His thesis concerns the Gnostic heresiologists and is titled The Patristic Polemic Against Marcion, a historiographical study of methods and motives. Dr. Deaker came to St. Louis in August of 1985 to work on the Doctor of Philosophy degree in Historical Theology. His area of concentration is early church history. For 8 years, he worked as a reference librarian at the New Orleans Public Library, working specifically in archives and local history. From 1982 to 85, he also taught Greek, New Testament, and church history at Union Baptist Theological Seminary in New Orleans. Currently, he is a teaching assistant in the Department of Theological Studies at St. Louis University. His presentation this afternoon is entitled The Patristic Heresiologist Passé.
After hearing the presentations this afternoon, I'm not sure if we really need my paper, but nevertheless, I think the larger world of scholarship, and we need to be reminded that this is a problem today, that we have neglected the fathers in our research. I would like to pose to you a question. Since in 1945 there was discovered the 13 Gnostic codices at Nag Hammadi, do we still need the church fathers for our Gnostic research? That is, are the patristic heresiologists passé? Now, there can be no doubt that the discovery of the 48 Gnostic works, the 38 codices at Chinovaskion, is a monumental find. The discovery of the Nag Hammadi library is of the same magnitude as the discovery of the Qumran scrolls in 1947, the discovery of the writings of Origen at Tura, the discovery of the great manuscripts of the New Testament, the fragile papyri, the codices, Sinaiticus, and Vaticanus. What these other finds did for the study of sectarian Judaism, New Testament textual studies, and for the study of Alexandrian Christianity, the non-comedy find is doing for the study of Gnosticism. At last, after centuries, we now have works, some of which were written by Gnostics, and others at least were used by Gnostics. We now have primary texts of what the Gnostics read and believed. The result of this find, however, did not immediately produce a neglection of the heresiologist. It took years for the manuscripts to be copied, edited, and published. By 1958, 1960, the trend away from the fathers had only just begun. In this year, Jean Doret published The Secret Books of the Egyptian Gnostics, an introduction to the Gnostic Coptic manuscripts discovered at Chinovaskion. The 1960s saw the revisions of the standard books on Gnosticism. Robert M. Grant reprinted his in 1966. Hans Jonas issued a third reprint of his in 1963, both in an attempt to keep up with the changing tide of Gnosticism. By the 1970s, research clearly had shifted away from the heresiologist and shifted to Nag Hammadi. In Leiden, there began the publication of the essays on the Coptic Gnostic Library. Then came the facsimile edition of the Nag Hammadi codices, the Coptic Gnostic Library, and Nag Hammadi studies. In the last 2 years of the 1970s, less than 8% of the works published concerning Gnosticism directly pertained to the Gnostic heresiologist. In the 1980s, the research relating to Gnosticism has focused almost exclusively on Nag Hammadi. From 1980 to 1984, the percentage of research directly on the fathers and on comedy has dropped to less than 7%. Regardless of this shift in research, we must seriously ask the question, does the very important find non-comedy do away with our need for patristic heresiological research? In the line of non-comedy, are the fathers passé? Are they no longer needed? In order to answer this question first, we need to know the nature of Gnostic studies in the past. In the first three centuries, the fathers were refuting Gnosticism as an immediate threat to incipient Catholicism. Irenaeus of Lyon, Tertullian of Carthage, Hippolytus of Rome, Clement of Alexandria, and Origen all become primary sources in this period for knowledge of and refutation of Gnosticism. Granted, with Irenaeus, Tertullian, and Hippolytus, there is a stress on refutation, exposing the mysteries of the Gnostics, explaining their dependency on paganism or other known heretics, and also explaining the novelty of Gnosticism. The Alexandrians, however, were much more concerned with taking up some of the legitimate concerns raised by the Gnostics and offering an integration into what became known as the Alexandrian Gnosis, which got them into trouble. Some of people would consider them as heretics now. When in the 4th century the immediate threat of Gnosticism waned, partly because of the union of church and state, which did not solve heresy, particularly dualism, a second generation of Gnostic heresiologists came to prominence. The ecclesiastical historian Eusebius of Caesarea incorporated the older heresiological literature into his brief study, Ecclesiastical History. However, the true new heresiologists of the 4th and 5th century were Epiphanius of Salamis, Augustine of Hippo, and John of Damascus, all of whom produced catalogs of heretics. Now, presumably, Epiphanius had some Gnostic sources. He may have had actual contact with the Gnostics to construct his panarion, his medicine chest. But he also went back to the earlier sources, to the works of Irenaeus, Tertullian, and Hippolytus. Augustine follows the example of Epiphanius. He catalogs 88 heresies. However, Augustine has spent several years as a Gnostic Manichae, and so his Manichaean works particularly are valuable for research. His De Heresibus catalogs 88 heresies, draws heavily upon the Panarion of Epiphanius, and also incorporates the other fathers. John of Damascus follows the same method of cataloging new heresies up to the Islamic conflict in the 7th and 8th centuries, but he too incorporates the earlier fathers into his research. A new stage in heresiological research began with the Renaissance and lasted into the early 20th century. Not only did the Renaissance scholars rediscover the study of scriptures in Greek and Hebrew, the classics of antiquity and philosophy, but they also began to unearth apocryphal and Gnostic texts. In 1463, the first translation of the Corpus Hermeticum was published, but it was not until the late 19th century that its non-Christian gnosis became apparent. The 16th century saw the beginning of the publication of the Mandaean text, but a critical evaluation of this Oriental Gnosis is still taking place today. The 19th century saw tremendous documentary finds and publications. The Pista Sophia, published in 1851, the two books of Jehu, published in 1891, the Gospel of Mary, the Apocryphon of John, and the Sophia Jesu Christi, all part of the Berlin Papyrus 8502, published in 1896. Although these notable discoveries were taken into consideration in the history of Gnosticism that followed, they did not replace the need for going back to the fathers as a source of information on the Gnostics. Augustus Neander, S.C. Bauer, Adolf von Harnack, and most recently Hans Jonas, have not neglected the fathers in their various approaches to the scientific study of Gnosticism, even though they do incorporate the new finds. Now there has been a new discovery, Knob Comedy. Granted, it is more comprehensive and complete than previous discoveries, it provides a large body of primary material for the scientific study of Gnosticism. But should this discovery break with the historical pattern of integrating and evaluating all sources in an effort to understand the Gnostic religion? Should the discovery of Nag Hammadi necessitate the doing away with the fathers for Gnostic studies? The scientists look at the use of the fathers in the past when new discoveries were made. We also need to note the current use of the fathers in Gnostic studies today. From the statistics that I mentioned earlier, we should note that research into the heresiologist in relation to Gnosticism has decreased. From 1977 to 1984, the percentage of studies on the fathers was 7% of all the works done on Gnostic studies. Within the 7%, 2.2% centered on Irenaeus, 0.77% on Origen, and 0.6% on Clement of Alexandria. Now, among the recent works that have come out on the heresiologists, two are particularly good. Klaus Kosorkin's work on Hippolytus' conflict with the heretics and the polemic against the Gnostics, in which he suggests that Hippolytus refutes the Gnostics first by claiming that they were plagiarizing the Greeks, exposing the secret doctrines of the Gnostics, and then he uses the successio hereticorum, the genealogical succession of known heretics which Irenaeus had introduced. The other work is the more general work of Gerard Vallée, a study in anti-Gnostic polemics. In this work, Vallée attempts to understand the methods and the motives of the three anti-Gnostic heresiologists, Irenaeus, Hippolytus, and Epiphanius. Ultimately, Vallée does not wish to integrate the three heresiologists with Nag Hammadi, however. Rather, he wants to determine the substance of the arguments used against the Gnostics so that he can understand what it is that they objected to in Gnosticism. Having seen the historical integration of the fathers when new finds occurred in the past, and the very limited research currently taking place on the heresiologists, we can now ask, what did the heresiologists offer in light of Nag Hammadi? Why do we still need to study the church fathers since we now have a Gnostic library found at Chinovaskion? Among possible responses, I know three. First, the heresiologists represent a broad geographical reflection of Gnostic conflicts. North Africa, Rome, southern France, Edessa, Cyprus, Alexandria, Egypt, and Caesarea all are represented by various church fathers in conflict with Gnosticism. Now granted, Nag Hammadi also has a good cross-section of different kinds of Gnosticism. Indeed, Nag Hammadi provides hitherto unknown Gnostic texts for previously suspected Gnostic systems. It includes not only works written by various schools of Gnostics, but also works used by these Gnostics. Nevertheless, the geographical representation of the heresiologist contributes to a larger picture of Gnosticism, even if they are presented in a one-sided manner. Second, the heresiologists present an organized approach to heresy and Gnosticism. This is particularly true with Irenaeus. Although Nag Hammadi presents different Gnostic systems from the inside, at least some of the heresiologists present broader portraits of the Gnostic system, even if it is from a polemical point of view. And then third, given their special interests, motives, and obvious methods, the heresiologists still provide insights into Gnostics which they encountered. Nag Hammadi cannot be a collection of every book used by every Gnostic. The heresiologists may represent, therefore, individual Gnostics not represented at Nag Hammadi. As the form critics would say, there must be a kernel of truth behind their elaborate structures and reputations. In conclusion, let me remind you of the proverbial swing of the pendulum in historical research. When manuscripts are discovered, there is always a tendency to focus research immediately on them, and so the pendulum swings in that direction.
So then the pendulum eventually swings back to the middle when the new sources are integrated into the whole of research in that field. The problem of the status of the heresiologist in the light of non-comedy is similar to the historical chronological problem between the Acts of the Apostles and St. Paul's own epistles. At one time it became important to set Paul against Acts, so much so that Acts was rejected and only Paul's writings were used to produce a chronology of Paul. Fortunately, in the last few years, New Testament scholars have reinstated the book of Acts into the historical reconstructions. Preference is still rightfully given to Paul. However, the book of Acts is used to supplement, to fill in the gaps. I suspect that the pattern of Gnostic research will follow this same path, and the heresiologist will be used to fill in the gaps of non-comedy. Are the heresiologists passé? Are we to gather all the copies of Irenaeus' Adversus Heresies, Tertullian's Adversus Valentinianus, Hippolytus and Lycus, Epiphanius' Panarion? Are we to gather these works and place them in some climate-controlled vault with acid-free containers, only for antiquarians and archivists to peruse? My answer is no. Are we to gather all the copies of Irenaeus' Adversus Heresies, Tertullian's Adversus Valentinianus, Hippolytus and Lycus, Epiphanius' Panarion? Are we to gather these works and place them in some climate-controlled vault with acid-free containers, only for antiquarians and archivists to peruse? My answer is no. It may appear for now that the heresiologists have been set aside for the primary writings found in non-comedy, but I hope that the scholars of this and subsequent generations will not forget that the heresiologists are sources for Gnosticism also. The pendulum needs to swing back to the middle, where all sources are integrated into research. All sources must be evaluated in any historical quest. Granted, they must be read with a very critical eye, weighing their methods, their motives, and their prejudices. Neither historian nor theologian can afford to neglect any source of information about Gnosticism. The patristic heresiologists are a source, no matter how tainted with polemic they may be. At least in this sense, the patristic heresiologists are not and must not ever become passé. Are the patristic heresiologists passé? Again, I do not think so. Thank you.
Mr. Timothy N.